this period together.
Finally, Dr. Wen, your words of advice as the country opens, what you think is the most important thing for people to do?
Frankly, we are not ready for a safe reopening. We have not met the White House's own criteria. None of the states that are reopening have met the White House's own criteria. So reduce your own risk, wash your hands, stay social distancing as much as you can. If you have to go back to work, ask your employer about what their protocols are to keep you safe. Also, do your part to reduce the risk for others. Do not plan gatherings. This is not the time to plan play dates and dinner parties. It is not safe to do that. And so reduce your risk and know that in keeping yourself safe, you're also reducing the risk for others around you as well. Stay away from people.
Go ahead.
Just stay safe and stay well. Know that we can all do our part.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lena Wen, emergency room physician, public health professor at George Washington University, former Baltimore health commissioner. We'll link to her Washington Post pieces, the latest as states reopen. Here's how you protect yourself from the coming surge. As we wrap up the show, I wanted to send good wishes out to a woman who's changed everything. A very happy, meaningful, landmark birthday to Naomi Klein. Happy birthday, Naomi. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people as possible on site. The majority of our amazing team is working from home. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. We're also at K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. Now stay tuned. It's 8 a.m. Stay tuned for The Gap.
Good morning, the world of KBOO and Portland and beyond on the interwebs, on the dial. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 on your FM dial. My name is Tammy. I'm here, the public affairs director at the station, and on the line with me, I have Althea Billings, the news director. Hello, Althea.
Hello. Good to be talking with you.
We are both in our respected homes. Respective or respected homes? Either way, well, yes, it's an
depends
house.
On how you feel about the home. us having our own is respective, I think.
I rent a room, so I don't think it's quite respected yet. But where yeah. are you? I'm in Northeast Portland. Where are you, Althea?
Pretty deep southwest.
Ooh, okay, cool. In the hills.
Yeah.
In the hills. Tops. Awesome. so I don't know if listeners are, they're probably like, what's going on? It's a Join Your Truth time slot. Well, that's true. However, that was something for a different show, and Althea and I had a thing going where we wanted to interview, start off with wanting to do an a clinic for the elections coming up, both the general elections and some of the local ones that we're having. But then the Rona hit, and the pandemic, we're all moving a little different now. So we've managed to get our stuff together after pretty much, reacting and responding to the situation. And now we kind of have our stuff together so we can get back on the horse, as they say. Would you say that's about right, Althea?
Yeah, I feel like we're on the horse this morning.
So we're going to ride this horse into the sunset. And it's also Friday, so happy Friday for all. And, so we're going to talk about some things that maybe aren't necessarily highlighted in the morning time slot. So since we're all, obviously doing the social distancing thing, life has changed dramatically. So we are changing our staff meetings to Zoom meetings, and that's a whole beast of its own. I start off really loving the Zoom meetings, especially having the different backgrounds and all. But very quickly, it wore off. How about you, Althea? How do you feel about them?
Yeah, there was some novelty there for a little while. I had fun. I used the thing that I was doing was I was looking for office spaces from TV, so it looked like I was in the TV show Parks and Rec for a little bit. But then I went and I did an interview with some people, and I forgot to turn it off, and I realized it seemed sort of unprofessional. But it just defaults that way. But yeah, you know, it was like good in that first couple weeks to like see people's faces and be like, oh, okay, great, everybody's still here. And then now, well, for one thing, we're not using Zoom anymore, because that's its own whole situation of people getting Zoom bombed and not having the most secure situation. So we're on Google Hangouts for the most part. What happened to Skype? You know, I feel like Skype had cornered this market, you know, X number of years ago, and now nobody's talking about Skype. Why do people hate Skype? I would love to know, because you know, it does, it performs similar functions in my experience.
That, well, that's why you're the news director, you know, you're asking the real tough questions. What, that is true. Skype was like the thing for a while, and huh, wow.
I'm worried about people. I'm worried about Microsoft. Is Microsoft okay?
I know.
Who's really suffering in this pandemic.
They need to pay the bills, right? They're not. They're being a mom and pop, they're not going to get that stimmy, you know?
How'd they lose out to Zoom and Google? They were on it so much quicker. Anyway, continue.
Your disappointment just has layers and layers, I hear. I did not mention, but this is indeed a call-in show. So if you are interested in contributing to the conversation, then you can do so. You can call our number, 503-231-8187, and our super-duper fantastic sound board op will answer the phone and connect you on the line with us. And again, because I think I may have said that a little too fast, it's 503-231-8187. Oh, is that it? Is that my phone number?
8187.
8187. Oh, my bad. My bad. Because the last, there's, yes, 503-231-8187. I confused the last few numbers because it's similar to my own. My bad. Early morning, live radio. This is it. So the Zoom etiquette, you did have the professional looking thing, and I was going for like the funny thing. And then,
yeah,
I started doing the professional thing, and then I noticed that the funny thing was becoming a thing. So I did appreciate it, though. I liked it a lot.
Well, I like that yours was just a giant picture of your dog kind of
behind
your head. Looks like you were going to get eaten by your own dog.
Another thing that this online video conferencing thing brought us, I guess it's a whole culture now, I'm going to call it what it is, you know, is the memes. The memes are killing me. They are so good, especially when there's anything like Tiger King related, you know. So that's been a hoot. Do you have a favorite meme yet? Like any? You did send me a TikTok yesterday, which was hilarious.
I did send you a TikTok about overachievers in Zoom meetings. I don't know if I have a favorite one. Obviously, Tiger King produced a lot of interesting discussions and content. And then what was that last episode? Why was there that whole sequence of the guy who they described as looking like a Chucky doll, like riding a jet ski through the ocean to Eye of the Tiger? Like that, it was a directorial choice, I will say that.
Oh, no, that's
I wonder if he sort of goaded them into
obviously
it.
Natural. It was off the cuff.
They're auteurs, and that's why they did it. It's interesting because, I mean, every so often a show like Tiger King will come along, or like some sort of app, I guess. I kind of like liken it to Pokemon Go. When Pokemon Go came out in like 2016, everybody was doing it, even people who would really not have been involved in it before. And so it sort of like takes over some part of the cultural imagination. And I think one of the interesting things about being under stay-at-home orders is that people, I think there's more of those cropping up in a shorter period of time. So like most everyone has seen Tiger King. If you haven't, folks, it's sensational. It's very interesting. Content warning for episode 5. I did not get that content warning.
I was trying to block that out.
Well, and it's one of those complex things that almost sometimes the memes seem to like take away from its complexity, if that makes sense. Like that it doesn't present you with a story that's honestly very easy to digest. It's like that wild that you can't really quite wrap your head around it. But I think that we're so hardwired to want to have there be a good guy and a bad guy, and if it's not clear who's a good guy and who's a bad guy, then our next reaction is to paint everyone with the same brush. You know, they're all just as bad as everybody else, which is sort of a nuanced way to look at it. And then also, I've watched some interviews with people who were in the documentary afterwards. There was a special that Joel McHale did, and David Spade interviewed all of them, whatever. And that there's a lot of kind of gruesome stuff that didn't make it into the documentary that might paint people in a different light.
I think someone was saying that, saw something that would say that we cut out all the time that Joe was being racist, and a lot of the people in black community are like, no, we definitely assumed he was, but we're just, you know, definitely knew, you know, we didn't.
Paragon of virtue, Joe Exotic.
It's, my goodness, that's a really good point, though, about how we are. I think there is a sense of, like, we're painting them all in one brush, and the memes also taken away from the, because I felt that way also about a bunch of other documentaries that came out where the memes are, you know, I'm like, oh, this meme is hilarious. This is probably going to be a pretty funny documentary, even though I knew that the subject content was not going to be funny. And then within, you know, 10 minutes of watching it, I'm like, why are they making fun? Like, this is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
You have Zeki on the line.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sure.
We got a caller?
Zeki.
Hey, Zeki, how's it going?
It's going. I mean, yes, we're still going. This is interesting. I haven't been able to call in months.
We're glad to hear you.
Yeah, but, so, okay, my question might be a little bit extreme, but I'm an essential worker, if you want to call it that, the type that has to go to the retail store and provide the services. Anyway, the masks. Why is it so hard to get Oregon to wear masks?
Well, that's an interesting thing. I know for myself, being a person of color, black woman, I'm scared to wear a mask sometimes because I'm worried that people, my whole life I've been told to show my face for my own protection, and I'm told to cover it, and honestly, just I don't feel comfortable doing that. So I'm not going to cover my face. I'll put, you know, like a scarf on, or definitely gloves wherever I go, but I don't think we're in a time for me to. That's my bit. I don't know as far as other people. Thea, what do you think?
Every time I go to a store, I open my mask like before I go in or whatever. Like I show them my face before I like close it again, just to make sure. Like, you know, I'm not trying to rob you or whatever.
Yeah, right. There is this like perception of what masks mean. For me, it kind of reminds me of this conversation I was having with my dad. He doesn't live in Oregon. He lives in Washington, and not in. He lives out in the country, but that folks have a harder time because he was describing it as some kind of like symbolism that not necessarily that you're like, oh, you buy into this is something that's like dangerous for you, but that. And to be clear, I don't agree with this perspective, but that it's a symbol of like, oh, this is something that I'm afraid of, that it could be interpreted in that way, that taking that action means that you subscribe to some, you know, belief that it could really have a major impact on you. And I think it's hard to say that it's a rational choice, but it's also one of those things that has to be explained in terms of like collective value. So it's the value to the community. It's not just that if you wear a mask, you're definitely not going to get sick, or if you have symptoms, you're definitely not going to get anybody else sick. But both people, either you have the germs or you don't, both people wearing those masks decreases that spread. And so you're not just explaining it to their own benefit. You're explaining it to other people as for people you don't even know. And I think that's hard to grasp sometimes, especially when we're in such like a tumultuous situation.
Yeah, they see it as like a selfish thing, me wearing my mask, when really it's not at all as selfish. It's more, like you were saying, collective restriction on spreading.
Right, and it's not like a, you know, the other thing that's definitely frustrating about it is it's not hard to do, you know? There was maybe a couple weeks there in the beginning where they were a little bit harder to come by, but now, you know, everyone and their mother has switched to either making masks or showing you how to cut up your socks at home and make a mask.
Handkerchief.
It seems achievable.
Coffee filter.
For people. Yeah, handkerchief.
Rubber bands. Yeah.
Totally.
Thank you.
Well, Becky, we appreciate your question. That was a real good
one.
Yeah,
thanks for calling.
And it's good to hear from you.
Yeah. It's really good to be able
we
to hear.
We appreciate you out there.
You know, you guys keep on keeping on.
Thank you, Becky. Take care.
Appreciate it.
So he's saying everyone and their mother is making masks now. My mother, she's buying the masks, but I am seeing everyone making them. And I got to say, I did hear someone mention that these masks might become a like some sort of a status, you know, like how you mentioned a collective agreement. And then if you have it, you're like this. And then if you don't have it, then you're like that. You know, kind of.
Yeah, and I think that's like really alarming, especially when it's something that, you know, affects people in some way indiscriminately of whether or not you subscribe to the idea that it could really do some damage to you, you know?
Mm. It's interesting. And I wonder if there is something that is, if it's like a black and white thing, races, if it's like, just kind of like people like this don't wear them and people like that don't wear them. And I don't think it is. And then, you know, I wonder about people that have hard time breathing when they wear the mask, I've seen all the videos of people cutting holes in their masks. And they're supposed to be joke videos, but then can't breathe. You know, some people can't breathe. So I wonder what the technology masks are going to be, you know, they're going to evolve into. Because I see some crazy stuff. There's a dude here in Oregon that just got the CDC licensed their mask that they created. And it's like this really wacky looking like face guard thing. But hey, it's approved, you know? So that's one type of thing that, you know, it's already happening.
Well, and I think like you mentioned, depending on how long things go on, or maybe this becomes more of like a seasonal reaction, it's hard to say. But like you mentioned, race is definitely something that like factors into whether or not people wear masks. Another thing is people who are deaf or hard of hearing. You're not able to read lips if people are wearing masks, which is an accessibility issue there as well. So, I mean, hopefully, my hope would be that there will be some kind of innovation for that kind of thing. But I also get that, you know, covering your face. I mean, what comes to mind for me are like, you know, World War II, like, gas masks or hockey masks or something. That the, like, face coverings are often, like, evoked in, like, horror movies and stuff like that. Not to say that you covering your face with a mask makes you look like you're in a horror movie, because it does not, and you should wear a mask. But that, you know, there's something, I think,
like
wired in our brains of like, yeah, a connotation, or just like, I want to be able to see somebody's face, I want to be able to read their expression to understand what's going on better, and to not be able to do that, I understand why we might need to innovate in that department, I guess.
I really wonder if there's also, I'm not a doctor, as they say, play one on radio, but I wonder if there's any type of like neurological responses to your brain. Because obviously we pick up on facial cues and stuff, you know, because we're social animals and all that stuff. And I wonder if that's like kind of not, you know, just kind of throwing us off. I know that I make a lot of jokes all the time, and it's really hard to not see people, you know, how they're reacting to it, you know. And some people just don't smile with their eyes, you know, tired brains didn't teach everyone. So it's really kind of difficult to pick it up, and I've, you know, so that's kind of been a bummer. But going back to the online stuff and innovations, and another thing that I think is really cool, the online social gatherings. I've seen things like open mics, I've seen webinars, I've seen Paris, I've seen France, I've seen it all, you know. It's really heartwarming. What have you been to any of these online social gatherings, happy hours and whatnot?
I haven't. My roommate has been involved in some of them, and she's had a good experience. She used to live in New York City and was expressing to me that there was like this comedy show that she had always wanted to go to, but that she could never get tickets for. And then now online, she was able to get tickets and actually see it and fulfill that, which I thought was pretty cool. I'll be interested to see, like, you know, this idea that things will go back to quote unquote normal is maybe inaccurate. There will be some new thing that we'll be doing, but I wonder how much of that will stick around.
We have Nathaniel on the line.
Oh, cool.
We've got a caller.
Nathaniel.
Hello, Nathaniel.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Listen, I'm a public health anthropologist, although I'm retired. And my most recent specialty was tobacco. So I have some familiarity with respiratory diseases. That is, my specialty was how the tobacco industry tries to undermine social and political issues. So I want to say something about masks, and you're not going to like to hear this. I have seen no scientific evidence that, in general, masking helps anybody physically. It may help a lot of people emotionally. The WHO guidelines are very different than the CDC guidelines. And the WHO has nobody who was promoted or appointed by Trump. And I've worked with WHO people. And I have a lot more trust in them than I do in anything coming out of the United States government at this moment. The WHO says that masks are only particularly useful in reducing the spread of the disease if a person is actively coughing or sneezing, then they're wearing a mask protects other people, or if they're treating a COVID-19 patient, in which case the mask protects them. They also say it's really important to change the masks frequently, because as soon as they become wet, if in fact they are a barrier to your virus, as soon as they become wet, they become dangerous, and you need to change them. You need to keep your hands away from your face mask even more than you need to keep your hands away from your face. You need to wash your hands even more often if you're wearing a mask than if you're not wearing a mask. So this is the WHO says the masks are only really useful in breaking the transmission of the disease if you are actively coughing or sneezing, or if you're treating COVID patients. And they say that the way most people are wearing masks, they don't say this. This is my conclusion based on what they do say about changing masks, washing hands, that most people are using the masks improperly, that most people are using the masks in a way that, if they actually are contagious, will increase contagion. They also make a really big point about disposing of the masks properly. Now, they don't say laundering them, but they say disposing of them properly. So the masking, in my opinion as a public health professional and an anthropologist, is about a human anxiety, which is no small thing at this time. I'm anxious. Everybody's anxious. And we're anxious because we don't really know what to be afraid of. We don't really know how dangerous things are, how dangerous any particular individual might be to the spread of the disease. And we're anxious. But the masks are amulets. They are not medical devices the way they are being worn by most people. And I respect people's rights to make themselves less anxious. I do things to make myself less anxious. But I question people's rights to make me do something to make them less anxious. That's where the paradox is, the complication is for me. And if you ask me, I will do things to make you less anxious. I'm a generally considerate human being. But let's call what it is what it is. I'm doing this to protect you from your anxiety. I'm not doing this to protect me from you or you from me. So that's where I am.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And you do bring up a couple of really good points, I got to say. And I appreciate you talking about them. I think that when people are essential workers, they don't know who's coming in contact with them, because they're just out there, you know, on the front lines. And, you know, mostly I'm talking about people like grocery stores, because, you know, they, you know, talk about like the big ones. There's some of the smaller ones that are, you know, like, as you say, are making people come in with face coverings, that are making people, you know, limiting how many people are coming in and out. As opposed to that, there's some places that are just really not keeping track, and not, you know, anyone can walk in there with a mask, without a mask. And so those people are really, I understand the severity of why they need to wear the mask, definitely. The disposing of it, though, I'll tell you what, I walk around town and I see masks all over the place. And I wonder, is this, like, what, why would they do this? This is probably, like, 10 times, you know, as worse than, I mean, they're just leaving their DNA around for someone else to maybe or maybe not get sick, you know? And then as far as the, you know, for the collective anxiety, I don't mind putting something on my face to make someone else feel less anxious, but definitely not the price of me possibly getting, you know, attacked for it, or for whatever, you know, for whatever racist underlinings that would come from that. So I appreciate your point of view, and that's, you know, it's something that you don't necessarily hear all the time, so definitely nice to get another perspective.
I'd like to, as far as people working in stores, grocery clerks or pharmacy clerks or whatever, I would say that it's reasonable for them to behave as if they were treaters of COVID-19 patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly reasonable for them to behave as if they were doctors and nurses, seeing as many people of unknown status as they do. But I'm talking about the rest of us, and I'm talking about the people, you know, who are looking down on people who refuse to mask, or harassing people, you know, who decline to mask, or coming up with, you know, complicated explanations about this is about masculinity, or this is about, you know, some right-wing politics, or all of those things are in the mix, because all of those things are stirred up right now. I mean, this is a situation that scares the pants off of everybody. And when people are scared, they revert to whatever their baseline is. And if that's sweet and generous, that's sweet and generous. And if it's mean and obnoxious, it's mean and obnoxious. That's kind of how human beings operate. But I just wish that the conversation could be out in the open about what the actual value of masking is and what the danger of masking is. Since most people are probably using the masks inappropriately and not disposing of them, potentially not disposing of them properly, and that's not causing a huge outbreak of disease again, that's another sign that the masks don't really do much of anything for most people. And there's no question, WHO says, if you are coughing or sneezing, if you are passing large droplets into the atmosphere, wear a mask. There's no question about that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I kind of remember when things were just, I guess, starting to heat up, people were eager to make face masks, and there, I think maybe at that point the WHO's sort of counseling about it was more at the forefront. Maybe the CDC hadn't come out with anything yet, but that there was a hospital, I want to say in Salem, who was offering like surgical fabric for people to sew masks and give them back to the hospital, because at that point the focus was on, we don't have enough supplies. But that, you know, the sort of idea that face cover, that a cloth face mask could extend the life of an N95 mask, or if you put like a vacuum cleaner filter in it, then it could act on a similar level. I think some of that nuance has definitely left the conversation, and it is more, I would agree, it is also a social cue that, you know, person over 60, do not be afraid of me. I'm going to try to take precautions to not give this to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm a person all over 60. I'm going to be 72 on my next birthday, and I have underlying bronchitis. So I am not, you know, a 22-year-old, you know, who thinks that he's going to live forever. So I take precautions. I haven't been closer to anybody than about 6 feet since the middle of March. I don't gather with people. The other thing that I worry about, or at least disturbs me, is that people are nuts about the outdoor stuff. I mean, if you wear a mask when you go into a supermarket or a pharmacy to protect the workers, that's one thing. but wearing a mask when you're passing somebody and you're on opposite sides of the street is just about nuts. I mean, if you're outside, the air is moving, it's humid, your chances of passing COVID-19 virus, the coronavirus, are slightly less than getting bitten by a dragon.
Yeah, airflow does have a lot to do with it, doesn't it?
Well, we really appreciate your input. Yeah, go ahead. Gonna have to
I'm perfectly happy to have this conversation with, you know, the public at large or any individual, but we ought to be having this conversation about what's really going on. The other thing that I just see a little another minute of your time is this noise making at 7 o'clock that goes on in, I guess, as a continuation or an expansion of what has been going on in New York. Again, you know, people have all kinds of conscious motives for why they do it, but the underlying piece of it is to say, I'm still alive, I can make noise, which is, again, about our anxiety.
That's very human, though, you know?
Yeah, it's not it's so human that this stuff used to be called charivari, and people did it when the dragon ate the sun during an eclipse. They did it during the plague. People make noise because to drive away demons, to support care workers for whatever reason, but to say, I'm alive. That's why we shake hands. That's why we say hello to people. I mean, the real meaning of it is, I'm alive, you're alive, great.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, that's a really beautiful sentiment, and I'm going to have to let you go on that one. But you really left us with a positive note, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, man, that really made me feel good. I'm going to knock this table down and just make a bunch of noise. Just, I'm alive, and I'm here, and I'm doing it.
You have Tim on the line. Tim on the line.
Hey, Kim.
Tim.
Oh, Tim. Hey, Tim. What's up, Tim?
Oh, hi. How you doing? I've got a question for you.
How are you?
Yeah. Huh?
How are you?
Am I what?
I said, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, good. I hope you're doing well. Anyways, I'm a dialysis patient, and in our clinic, they're making us all wear these masks, the little white ones with a band on the ears, and they're telling us we can't remove them to eat or drink or anything like that, but they don't give us the opportunity to wash our hands after we have them on and we're hooked up, because we can't get to the sink. We're hooked into the chair. And I was wondering, is this good to do it like that? And is it true that you can't even, you can't eat to, you can't lift the mask for a second, pop in some food and put it back down? Is that dangerous to other people?
Althea, do you have anything you'd like to say? Me personally, I am in no way, shape, or form can answer that reasonably. I can only give my opinion, which would be to listen to people who are professionals. So, Althea, do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, I think Nathaniel, who was just on the line with us, would have some thoughts about that. But mm-hmm. I think that it depends on what the purpose of your mask is, right? Like, if you're thinking that you might be an asymptomatic carrier, then removing the mask could be releasing, I guess, the germs that you would have. However, I'm reminded of a story of a friend of mine who was hanging around a hospital for a while, had a sick family member that, doctors, they wear masks, and when they eat, they set out a paper towel and they take the mask off from the ears, set it, you know, outside down on the paper towel, eat, and then continue to use it. I don't know if that's advisable. It might be one of those things to bring up with them or figure out if there's kind of like an alternative plan that you could be sure to eat before you go, or have a plan for like right after you leave that you have something ready to go for yourself. But I can appreciate that it's an inconvenience, and your brain is, you know, your brain wants to do your routine, and to not be able to do your routine can be frustrating for sure.
And it's also, you can ask. Always feel. I think that sometimes, especially during these type of times, over-communicating could be even better than not communicating at all. Because you want to know, and you know, if you're hungry and you're hooked up and you know you're doing your thing and trying to get better in a facility that's there to make you healthier, then you could, you know, I would ask. I would just say, hey, what's up? And definitely about the hand washing. I would definitely ask about the hand washing.
Yeah, it sounded like if you're using a mask, you're supposed to wash your hands more frequently. But also, these masks, oftentimes they fall on the floor. They just pick them up and give them back to you. And I wanted to object to that, and they put me down. And I was wondering, am I illogical or freaking out when it's not necessary? I didn't think you should do that.
Well, it speaks a little bit back to Nathaniel's point from earlier that, you know, people are managing their anxiety during this very, very anxiety-filled time. And it's...
But if it falls on the floor?
I mean, that...
I don't know if there's a five-second rule for coronavirus.
I don't think there's a five-second rule, period. But, yes, I just don't... I think there. I personally don't think you're in the wrong in that one, because I mean, if you drop something, you know, that you're supposed to put on your face, then you probably would not want to put it on your face because it fell on the floor. Whether it's a mask or a comb or, you know, food or anything.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, these are some great. Great questions. I'm still on that. People make noise just to say they're like, "We're here. I am here." That's really fantastic. Really.
We have Boris on the line.
Oh, Boris on the line. Okay. Hello, Boris.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, I want to address the social anthropologist guy with his comments about the fact that, in his opinion, wearing a mask is not a good idea. Let's make this real simple. Let's look at simple logic. So if somebody is standing next to you and they sneeze and you're wearing a mask, which is a barrier, is it less likely that their sneeze is going to affect you, or is it more likely than if you're not wearing a mask and they sneeze right next to you? I mean, to me, it's ludicrous. Mm. What is the question? Where, if you're not wearing a mask, are you more likely to be affected by the sneeze, or are you less likely to be affected by the sneeze? Now, you can also say, well, you know, people aren't walking around sneezing and stuff like that. It doesn't matter, because they've already found that the virus can hang in the air for longer periods than they initially thought. So you can walk into a room, it could be in the air. You're not wearing a mask. Are you less likely to be affected than if you are wearing a mask? It's pure logic. I don't see where the complication comes in. I think it has more to do with politics and agendas than pure logic. What's your thought?
Mm. I think it's really interesting that he said the total opposite, and you're, you know, saying the exact, he's saying this is not about politics.
Well, I'm
logic.
Just trying to argue logic. Just
that
pure
is,
logic.
It's interesting that it's you're both coming from a point of view where you think you're being logical, you know? And it's just interesting, you know, just like as a bystander.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, I'm asking you, is there logic involved here or not?
Go for it. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be charitable to what Nathaniel was trying to say is that if you are sneezing, if you have any kind of outward symptoms, definitely wear a mask. I think what the WHO hasn't necessarily proven is to what level wearing a specific kind of mask, which is a cloth face mask, if you are not showing symptoms, to what degree does that increase or decrease your likelihood? And I think that the way that some people treat masks, or if they're touching their face or they're touching their face mask, that can definitely decrease its effectiveness. Is it entirely ineffectual, I think that would be really hard to argue, especially because there are so many different types of masks out there. But I think, to be charitable to his point, he wasn't saying that masks themselves are pointless, but that the way that people use them is perhaps not as, you know, careful as perhaps it should be, or connected with what the actual risk is to other people, depending on the type of mask. Does that track?
I think you missed my point. My point is, if you're breathing and there's a barrier in front of your face, is it less likely that you're going to inhale something hazardous if you're wearing a barrier or if you're not wearing any barrier at all? It's very simple.
Well,
I'm talking about the effect on you. Obviously, if you're sneezing and coughing, if you're wearing a mask, it's going to cut down on the spread of your sneeze and cough. I'm talking about if you walk into a room and the virus is in the air, or somebody sneezes right next to you, is it less likely that you're going to inhale the virus if you're not wearing a mask or if you are wearing a mask? It's that simple.
Well, you know, it's it also depends on the barrier itself. If it's dirty, then you're not doing yourself any favors. And I think that I know that we're coming from a place where we are just kind of asking. It was more the caller that had these opinions, not us. So I'm going to have to just wrap you up. And, you know, this is a discussion. And also depends on the type of mask. So it's also important to have the right type of mask.
Point taken.
Yeah, so I really definitely appreciate your point of view. And, gosh, I wish you could just have that conversation with Nathaniel, but we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
You have Mike on the line.
Oh, Mike. Hey, Mike, how's it going, Mike?
Conversation. Hey, you know, I'm not going to weigh in on the mask thing. I mean, I think there's logic involved on both sides. I tend to think they're helpful to a point, but I just wanted to throw something out there really quick that the gentleman, the dialysis patient, was talking about, and the hand washing. It's astounding to me, and it just seems like the most obvious thing in the world. If they don't have access to hand washing in the clinic where he's getting the dialysis, well, there's hand sanitizer. And it's just mind-boggling to me that apparently they're not using hand sanitizer, which would be a very easy way to deal with it if there's no sink. And really, that's all I wanted to say.
That's a good, you know, you think a place like that would just generally take extra precautions of being sanitary, but I've never been in a place like that, so I'm not quite sure how they work. But yeah, that's appreciate that point, caller. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for the
forum.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good one.
So we have about 19 minutes left, and there are a couple other things that we wanted to get to on the list that were not mask-related. Is it politics? Is it for your public health? Who knows?
well, don't say who knows.
People know there are obviously a lot of
that are available to you.
There are a lot of resources out there for you to gather yourself. So we talked about the Zoom etiquette, the social gathering, and you know, I did in this program want to highlight things that Gen Z and Y are coping with. And I live in a house with roommates, and something that seems to be an ongoing subject is online dating, which I think is very interesting that during a pandemic that would be like a thing that's very popular to discuss. I saw that the New York Times had an article. I don't know if you call those articles anymore. They had an Instagram post about it.
It's an article, Tammy.
It's a type of article.
Of course.
I want to read an article. It's the gist.
Sure.
You know, it started off with articles and to BuzzFeed lists, and now it's just Instagram posts.
What do you get your news from, a newspaper? No way.
We love the newspaper though. I love opening it up, turning to the funnies. My roommate was telling me that Tinder gave passport accounts. I don't know if you want. I just wanted to talk about this because I thought it was kind of funny. They figured that since everyone is home, they're going to be swiping around, and gave everyone passport accounts, which means that everyone from around the world can see your account, and you're not limited to just someone in your mileage. So I think it's like your radius. I think it's like up to 10 miles or something. So my roommate was saying that he had gotten like 100 likes or something, right? And you say the only problem is that you can't see who likes you. But in the genius that is the plot of Tinder, I guess, they also made it so that you can get a gold account for half the price. I don't know if this is still ongoing. This is not a promotion or anything.
What does a gold account let you do?
And it's like, oh, there's a... But wait, there is more. So a gold account is, I guess, the top VIP account that you can have in Tinder. I'm not sure what that consists of. I don't want to know. And my roommate was really, really close to getting it. And then he says, you know, but it kind of defeats the purpose of, like, seeing who these people are, because it could be people from, like, you know, Italy or, Iceland or something, right? And he's like, I'm not going to meet these people, so what am I going to do, just talk to them? And he didn't mean it in the sense of, like, I wouldn't want to talk to these people, but it's more of, like, you know, I'm not on this app to find friends, I'm on it to date. And so it went from, you know, them having this diabolical plan of, we're going to open up these accounts and we're going to make this, or we're going to up this platform on this app, and then we're going to make these golden accounts half price, and everyone, we're going to get all the monies, right? But what it did is it actually deterred him from even purchasing that, and he just deleted his whole account because he's like, there's no point to this anymore. So I thought that was a very interesting turn of events. And, you know, I'm, like, you know, sitting there with, you know, just, like, my popcorn, watching this whole thing happen, like, making my pasta and stuff. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, look, everybody wants love and human connection, especially in, like, a very weird time. But, I mean, admittedly, I would find it sort of difficult to do that right now. But I guess maybe if Tinder wasn't like a dating and a hookup app, then maybe it would be different. It's like, hey, make friends around the world. If there was a pivot to that, you know, maybe it would be kind of a thing of like, hey, you're from Iceland, what's going on? You know, like, I'm happy to chat in that sense. I had another thought and now it's slipped my mind. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how you know, dating apps fare when, you know, the more typical places that people meet each other in person, like coffee shops or clubs or whatever, when bars, when those open back up, if Tinder is
the more library
or less active. The library. Public parks, I suppose.
Yeah. So you say no one's dating until Kate Brown says, all right, y'all get it.
I have to check your temperature twice today before I'll meet you.
7-hour intervals. Well, I wonder, is it going to be like that? You know, you're bringing up a good point, though.
That is part of the governor's reopening plan, that some businesses, so this is my understanding of it, some businesses, basically every business is going to have to do more contact tracing. So they're going to have to keep closer track of their customers' names, phone numbers, when they were here, how long, and some of them are actually going to be able to, and the governor may indeed require them to have their temperature taken before they're allowed inside.
Would you go get your temperature taken to walk into one of the fantastic establishments over by the station, you know, go grab a beer somewhere or a sandwich, or, you know, one of the spots or something?
I would think about doing it for bubble tea. I really miss bubble tea. yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you and I were talking about this a while ago, that, you know, if testing itself were to increase, you might end up seeing, you know, certain establishments that are for people who've had it, or have different hours for people who've been exposed and who haven't been exposed, who have the antibodies or don't have the antibodies. I think that's a little further off now. I think maybe what is happening is the best that we can muster at this point. I can't, you know, say what will come of the business world, but yeah, May 15th, the governor is looking to have some businesses start reopening at that point.
Wow. I wonder if we'll be like, in my day, we held hands and went to movie theaters and I don't know, fed each other grapes and stuff, you know, like it's, I hope that people still can, you know, have that sense of,
yeah,
you know, intimate camaraderie. I wanted to just check with our engineer if we have any phone calls on the line, or if I...
It's all quiet.
All quiet, okay. All right. We have a little bit left. If you are interested in chit-chatting or talking a little bit about maybe how you see the dating landscape of the next few years, Zoom etiquette, how you as a millennial or as just a human being are coping with this type of national pandemic, 503-231-8187 is the number. I'm Tammy, the public affairs director. On the line with me is Althea Billings, the news director. I'm coming from the fantastic and hilly northeast Portland. Wow. Oh wait, you're in the hills. You're in the hills.
Where are you?
There's an incline. There's an incline here. I definitely feel it when I'm on my bike. Before we wrap up,
Tammy, I thought of a thing about online dating. Can I share?
Okay,
with you?
Go for it. Yes.
I was video calling with some of my friends in New York City, and they found there's an ad. I want to say it's from Heineken, that if you get engaged during the pandemic and like post about it and tag Heineken, you have a chance to win like $60,000 for like your wedding and honeymoon. And they were very excited about that. They're not dating, but they did like consider the idea of what if we got engaged to try to, you know, impress Heineken. The rules of the contest were vague, the qualifications were vague. If you're out there, you know, you want to get engaged, why not right now tag Heineken, you know, get your get stuff paid for.
Isn't this a contest that they're doing?
Yeah, it's a contest. There's no criteria. They're just like a panel of judges will decide if your love is good enough for Heineken.
I guess Heineken is just riding the wave that they aren't, you know, Corona or something.
Yeah.
We have Sam in the line.
People at the beginning of...
We have a caller, Sam.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Good, thanks. Just a few thoughts. One of them is I'm doing way better because y'all are bringing a very comedic and pleasant vibe to my morning, so thank you for that. Loving your hosting skills from the both of you. And I could come up with some thoughts on Tinder and whatnot. But I actually just wanted to call with one possibly like closing thought on the mask thing, which is while I was sitting here doing some chores and whatnot, I only heard good points all around. I think that I basically heard three really good points, and I don't think any of the points ruled each other out. I heard one person be like, the masks aren't 100% medically effective. And another person say, well, they're still more effective than nothing. And I also heard one of you say, like, I have legitimate reason as a person of color to be nervous about wearing a mask. So I just heard three really good points. I don't think anybody that I heard was wrong. So that was the main thing I wanted to just throw in there since your phone line was silent. You know, it's complex. And I don't know. So I just think it's one of those many situations where, you know, nobody has to be wrong in that discussion. And I think everybody was basically right. So, welcome to the world. Anyway,
appreciate
dating,
you.
I guess, here would be my one thought on dating, because I guess I'm recently single, and I was just downloading the apps when this all happened. So I basically only have app experience from quarantine. I think it's pretty dumb. I do it for, like, a few minutes every now and then. I'm like, I'm not happy I did that. You know, it's just too much screen time for me. But here's the value I see in making it global would be for people who are like locked in an apartment in some city without a roommate, who are just going insane and do want, if you're blessed to have roommates or neighbors or family and you have enough social connection, that's great. But I bet there's a lot of people out there where they've already built their whole life around dating, you know, and on apps, like, and all of a sudden they're locked inside. So what are they going to do besides might as well talk to someone in Iceland? Anyway, those are all my thoughts. You guys are great. Thank you very much. And have a great morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks,
appreciate
Sam.
That. I don't know if I would say I'm hashtag blessed to have my roommates. I definitely do feel like that more and more now. I don't know what I would definitely do if I was just in my lonesome. Yeah, some great points. And you know, there's I didn't even think about that. People fresh off the love train, you know, getting off a heartbreak city. I feel that. That could be rough.
We have a caller. Yeah, no, I've got a caller online.
Oh, I got
Constant.
What do you think? Okay, can we take this call?
I think we'll go quick.
One quick call.
Okay, Constant.
Caller, you're on with us.
Well, all right, thanks. I just wanted to mention that it's pretty well known that the more you go after bugs like germs and viruses and stuff, they mutate and they change and they get resistant to the stuff you're doing. I'm just wondering, it's not as if the virus is the only thing in the world these days. There are still all the other things that we deal with. And all this disinfectant, all of this stuff that's going on, seems to me to be offering them an excellent opportunity to mutate to points where the things that are being done are no longer effective. And it's been documented for generations that all of the germs that we live with seem to get stronger the more we go after them. I was wondering what you guys might think about that.
I mean, I think that's a great point. That's definitely something that's been shown with antibiotics. And I think right in the beginning, when people, you know, when it first kind of came to the U.S. and people were very worried about it, the impulse was to buy all the Lysol that you can get. But that, that what was actually demonstrated is that soap is actually more effective against it than hand sanitizer, because the virus is coated in an oil substance. So soap is great at, you know, getting in between your hand and the oil, which I think was a real kind of twist on what people had expected, which was, I'm going to go out and buy all the Purell that I can, and I'm going to pour it all over my body, and then I'll be safe. But, you know, maybe, you know, dealing with it in the way of hand washing can be, something to embody going forward, of using the tools that we have instead of focusing on, you know, Purell or Lysol or a name drop brand of disinfectant here. Tammy, what do you think?
That's a good point. I like how Lysol has become a verb and a noun and everything. Wow. I'm a fan of soap. I have soap next to the sink, and I use it for my hands more than I do the hand sanitizer, but I also have a hand sanitizer in my car because there isn't any water and I can't, you know. So I'm happy to be able to use both of them. And soap is great. Yeah, I think there has not been an emphasis on soap, but more on the name brands, which is another interesting point. Maybe we can cover that next week.
Yeah, and we learn more all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Doctors didn't used to wash their hands. Me, a doctor, give you germs? Insulting. I would never wash my hands before I touch you.
Well, before, I have a friend, and they said that, you know, after this, a lot of things are going to change. In the 80s, they were telling me, you went to the dentist. Dentists just reach right in there with their bare hands. You know, you can taste the cigarette off their fingers and stuff. They just dig in there, and it's just, but then after, you know, AIDS hit so many communities and killed so many people, you know, hey, gloves. So it's another thing to see how this changes in the future. But thank you so much.
Tammy, do we need to wrap up?
I think we are going to wrap up. And I also wanted to speak about what Sam said again, how he heard a bunch of good points, and that's awesome. And they didn't necessarily all agree with each other, but like, I agree. I don't think any of them were wrong. And that's
a complex thing.
It is. And we are political beings. We are social beings. We are all of these things. And so it only makes sense that when we look at things, we look at them through all these prisms, because we, you know, awesomely enough, aren't one-dimensional. So, you know, that's just something to remember when you're approaching these things and when you speak about them with other people, that everyone is coming from a different, you know, life experience and a different background, and they're going to react to it the best they can. You know, like Nathaniel said, we're only humans, and we just want you to know that we're not dead, and we're alive, and you're alive, and that's good.
Yeah, so appreciate very good. You, yeah. Well, let's make some noise. You know, we're alive. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Althea Billings.
And I have been and always will be Tammy of Tass. Thank you all so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:58 a.m.